ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
I'm doing well. I'm Branham, he's Blank, it's Brian behind the glass, and it is a Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I don't need to say it. I invented Taco Tuesday. We know that.
Acknowledge me.
There we go. Acknowledge me. We have a new record, Blankers. We have a new record. 2 minutes and 2 seconds.
I know where you were going with this.
Two minutes and two seconds. How did you know?
Because it's like we have like a scoreboard. We should have like a digital readout, and they don't care. They're oblivious to it.
I do track the record. I do track the record. The previous record was 1:30. Today, they shattered the record. 2 minutes and 2 seconds. First time they've been into the two-minute mark, which isn't crazy. Like, they're not going 5 minutes in. Like, that would be nuts. Two minutes, whatever. That happens from time to time. I know they were busy talking about people that spoil themselves, so we got to get that in. You know, that's more important. That's 2 minutes and 2 seconds into the Killer Bees. I'd rather have that than the Killer Bees. I don't blame them whatsoever. I'd rather have the Astros bullpen over Blair Henley. My goodness. I felt bad for Blair Henley yesterday, Blankers. We looked at his numbers yesterday. Okay, this guy's not ready. They had no choice. Like,
right.
Maybe. I mean, maybe they had a choice, hindsight 2020. If he was only going to get two outs, maybe just bring up a bullpen arm and just completely Johnny Holstaff it, which they ended up having to do anyways. If you were willing to pull him after just two outs, then you probably should have just bullpened it. But I felt bad for him. Like, that first inning, he can only get two outs, gave up the 5 runs. He said, "I'm sorry, guys," whenever he left the mound. I was sad for Blair Henley yesterday.
It's an absolutely tough spot to be in, regardless of who you're facing. When you face an offense as good as the Rangers, you can't help but feel for a guy, because you know that, you know, he's trying to do the big club a solid. But like you said, he wasn't ready for the moment. I mean, that's not where he was supposed to be at this point. No matter how, you know, he's older already, but even just the way he's pitching, he's not supposed to be there. Then you go in against that gauntlet of a lineup with probably very little notice on the day to get there and do what you need to do. And, you know, it goes that poorly, and you feel like, hey, all my dreams were shattered in one out of an inning, because everybody's dream is to make the big leagues. Hey, we're here. I'm there. Your family's here. Let's do this. And then it goes like that.
Yeah, I felt bad for the poor kid. And quite frankly, like, if Joe Espada said the right things after the game, and you won, like, hey, let's not bury the lead here. You won the game. Like, that was awesome, that in a game where Blair Henley makes probably the only appearance in his big league career, gets absolutely shelled, only gives up two outs, you actually won the game. And you actually won the game without needing to throw any of your big three relievers. I know they put Abreu in the game in the ninth, but you didn't need to. No. You were up by 5 runs. So that's the story. That's what a great win. But just talking about Blair Henley, I said he got two outs. He only got one out.
One, yeah.
He got one out because Seth Martinez came on and got that double play ball. We'll never see him in the big leagues again. That's my guess. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to be realistic about the situation. I don't think he's a big league pitcher. And I felt that way before we saw him pitch yesterday. Mm-hmm. Him pitching yesterday didn't really change my mind on that or influence that decision. Maybe it kind of supplemented it, but we knew that going in. I think the story of this game, though, was your guy, Seth Martinez. You mentioned the double play ball, came in and got that, got you out of what could have been even more trouble in the first inning. I mean, bases loaded, one out. They already had 5 runs. Double play out of the inning, kept you in the game. Astros offense would do enough. Obviously, you score 10 runs, you feel like you should win. But Seth Martinez, the entire bullpen was fantastic. I mean, they went 8 2/3 without allowing a run. But to me, it was Seth Martinez stabilizing the game, getting through 3 2/3, and only needing 32 pitches to do it.
Yeah, no, he was absolutely fantastic. This might have been the highlight of his career. This is a game that we may look back on later in the season and go, maybe because it was so early, we kind of took it for granted. But I think everybody was basically chalking up last night to an L. And to not only find the win, but to see the unsung heroes that stepped up or the guys that got going was just seemingly like a big kind of shot in the arm, positive-wise, for the rest of this team. When you think about Bregman getting 3 hits, when you think about Yordan hitting another bomb, and it all starts with what Seth Martinez was able to do, that you just have to feel good going up against the Royals now to say, hey, we got out of that series with a split, but more importantly, that was more of a win than any split in a series because of the way you went about your business. You got hammered in one game. You won the final two. The way you went about it got some guys going, got some other guys to really keep going like Jordan. And you got to feel pretty good getting into the next series.
Yeah. You are a little bit shorthanded when it comes to the pitching staff. Like, Seth Martinez is probably going to be shut down for a little bit. Brandon Belak, like, tip your cap to Brandon Belak. I didn't think he was going to be somebody who could pitch multiple innings yesterday after going, you know, deep, throwing a lot of pitches on Friday. Ended up throwing 23 pitches and eating two innings. So, like, that was admirable. I'm sure Belak's probably down for a day or two. I'm sure Seth Martinez is down. I mean, I would say 2 days for Belak. I would say 2 days for Seth Martinez. I would say 2 days for Taylor Scott. We do know that reinforcements are on the way. Your guy, Parker Mashinsky, has been called up. What's interesting about that, though, is that Mashinsky was up, then he got sent down, and he's being brought up before his 15-day window, which you can only do if you place a pitcher or a player on the injured list. Who in the world is going to be on the injured list?
Shocker.
Framber Valdez. Yep. Now, I don't think that that is like a hint at all, because like we were going over the scenarios yesterday. Even if everything is completely fine with Framber Valdez, let's say this is the smallest of issues when it comes to Framber's elbow. If it's the smallest of issues with Framber's elbow, is he still pitching in 15 days?
I don't think so. I think they're going to be hyper cautious. They're going to border on, you know, as the Astros always do. If they're ready to go, they give him one extra day. If it's a position player, you got to believe with a pitcher of that importance, they're not going to rush him back.
No, and I think that, like, that's why it's not a hint. Like, Mashinsky's going to take Framber's spot on this roster, but that's not a hint on some bigger news with Framber Valdez. They would place him on the injured. This is why a spot his quote yesterday was ridiculous. Well, it's good news that we didn't place him on the IL. No, man. Like, it's his left elbow. If it's the smallest of issues, you're still shutting him down for 2 weeks.
Sure.
So you might as well use that spot to get a pitcher up. There's got to be another move, too, though, because Hinley mentioned after the game that he's being sent back down, which we could have told you that before he threw a pitch in that game yesterday. So there's going to have to be somebody else that gets called up as well. Just haven't received the news on that. I'm curious if we hear anything with Framber today, because he was coming back yesterday. I'm sure that they had an MRI as quick as possible yesterday. That doesn't take, you know, a whole day to read. I fear that if we don't hear anything today, it's one of those, didn't like what they heard the first time around, let's get second and third opinions.
Yeah, it's possible. You know, sometimes maybe they want to just wait to the regular media availability with Espada and or if Dana's still traveling with him. When they get ready for the Royal Series. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, look, just in my experience in professional sports, the good news, you want to get out as quick as possible. You don't want it buried on a Friday, and you want to get everybody to soak it up, you know, with as much of the day that you announce it on as you can. And the bad news, you might want to hang on to that one for a while because you're trying to spin it the way you want to spin it to try and get people to accept what you're trying to sell, which a lot of times people aren't buying.
Or it could just be you're getting more opinions, more doctors' opinions.
Yeah, that too.
Like, it was the Garrett Cole, I think, is an example of that. Like, there was rumors about Garrett Cole's elbow, and then there was nothing from the team, and then it came out later that he was seeking, like, tons of second and third and fourth opinions when it came to his elbow. That's why, like, if it doesn't come out, because, I mean, they play today. Mm-hmm. Joe Espada is going to meet with the media today. You're going to tell me he doesn't have MRI news whenever Framber went back to Houston on Monday, and then 24 hours later he doesn't have MRI news? I completely doubt that. So if it's good news, I think we hear something with Joe Espada today in his pregame availability. If it's not good news, I think it's radio silent.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying. They're not going to call an extra press conference, but if they know that they got a game and Joe Espada is going to talk anyway, they might do what they did yesterday. But you also bring up the possibilities of them wanting a second opinion. Look what happened with the whole Chandler Rome Verlander thing of the past.
Sure,
like they wanted to hang on to that. They didn't want that out there. They didn't want anybody thinking the worst. They were looking for second opinions. They were doing a whole lot, but it sure did take a whole lot of time to figure out what Chandler pretty much knew right from the jump.
Yeah, that's true. That's my point too. Like, if we don't hear anything today, it means they got news that they didn't like. They weren't happy with, and they're either, you know, going for second, third opinions, they're putting it off, whatever. I feel like if you don't hear anything from Espada today, it's not going to be good. And that's me completely guessing. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing doctor. I'm just, you know, experience of how Major League Baseball teams handle guys that are going to get looked at with imaging and stuff like that. Good news, I think we would hear something today. I think if we don't hear anything today, I think we can buckle in for some bad news. That win yesterday, I mean, heck of a win. Heck of a win. We mentioned for a lot of the reasons, the bullpen, a lot of guys that you don't really have tons of trust in, went out, mowed down a really good offense. They were able to split the series after everybody was losing their mind after losing the first two. Your starting pitcher got one out. What are the chances we look back at that win yesterday as the turning point, something that gets the Astros going, maybe one of the biggest wins of the year?
I think there's a pretty good chance because, you know, as much as we've talked about in the past, you know, with every season you can go back and you kind of start counting on one hand, God forbid you get to two of games you let slip away that you should have won, and you can start with that Yankee series this year. But, you know, at the end of the year, especially when you're jockeying for position and trying to get home court or trying to get in, those games – seem to pop up in your head. On the flip side, that game last night, no matter how early in the season it was, like I said, most people were writing it off as a loss, just having to take your lumps and realize, hey, it's just a bad break with, you know, a lot of losses early in the season, and you're going to have to just suck it up. Instead, you find a way to win. You find the offense to get clicking and put up double digits, and you get the performance of the bullpen, starting with Seth Martinez and every other guy that fell in line. And at a certain point, I think if this team does right the ship and really start to roll, you're going to look back even, you know, mid-season and go, that might be the kicker to what completely jump-started your entire season and put you in a totally different light, both in the clubhouse and from a public perspective, because that's a big win against a really good team when you were supposed to lose.
Yeah, I agree. I don't care about public perspective. I care about winning ball games. I don't care if the public perspective of you is negative and you win 105 games in the World Series. I couldn't care what the public thinks of me. Now, this being like this huge turning point, well, it depends on what they do. Like, mm-hmm. It depends on what they do the rest of the way. Is this game the biggest turning point? I don't know. Like, let me see what the next 151 games look like as opposed to yesterday's game. But a heck of a win. Like, a heck of a win. Everybody was – like, there was – not everybody. There was a lot of people that were – pooping on this team. A lot of people that were pooping on this team on Saturday. This isn't our year. The window's closed. Blah, 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 blah. And then they go out, win back-to-back games, split the series on the road against the World Series champions, and he did it with a guy named Blair Henley, getting one out at the start of yesterday's game. So I think it can be, but it depends on what you do going forward. Spencer Arrighetti, he wasn't available for yesterday's game, obviously. He pitched two Thursdays ago. He pitched last Wednesday. What do you think the game plan is going forward in the rotation? Because I think you're going to need someone else before Verlander comes back.
Yeah, I was thinking about it last night at the end of the game going, well, I guess they're just going to use Arrighetti now until Fromber's ready to come back. But then, you know, the thought crossed my mind to bring up to you guys, do you think that you do the Tampa-based opener situation? Do you think how you know, teams have in the past started to do that? And would you be willing to do that because of what that the early guys in your bullpen look like in terms of the ability to get guys out? Yeah, they got guys out last night. You can have confidence in Seth Martinez, but do you have confidence he can do that consistently? Because, you know, when you and I talked about him, I was like, he's a guy that soaks up innings. He has been able to go multiple innings for you in the past and get the job done. But it's a totally different ballgame when you're going to throw him out there as the starter and say, I need you to get once through the lineup.
I think that you're only going to need it one time, though. Like, if you go with the five-man rotation, which if you look at the days off, I think they're going to go five-man rotation for, like, you know, a couple of weeks, couple of turns through the rotation. And we're assuming that Fromber's out, like, multiple weeks here, which I think is kind of safe to say that. So with Verlander coming back relatively soon, one more rehab start, I think you only need that spot one time. So if you only need it one time, I don't think you start the clock on Spencer Arrighetti for one start and then send him back to the minors. Just my hunch. I mean, I could be totally wrong here. I think they would go more the spot start with Belak if you only need one. I think if you needed a series of some, or it's like for the foreseeable future, you need somebody to take that spot, I think that it would be Arrighetti. But it's only going to be one. Because, like, Verlander is the one that's actually taking Fromber's spot. Like, if Fromber's out, Verlander's in, you got your five. I think that Brandon Belak's just going to make the one start, emergency start, spot start. And then when Verlander's back, you're whole again. You have your five starters.
So you think they'll just leave Arrighetti where he's at?
I don't think they're going to call him up. It's just my – I mean, it's a guess. I don't obviously know this. I don't think that they do for one start. I feel like if Verlander wasn't coming back for like another 2 months and you could say that Arrigetti's going to get 4, 5, 6 starts, I think they would do it. But because Verlander makes 5 after Fromber's out, you only really need one start of coverage. Mm-hmm. I think they give it to Brandon Belak. It's just because it's the one start.
Yeah, and I think that, you know what, if they can piggyback on that, kind of do a hybrid of what they did last night. If Belak starts, you still have a Seth Martinez. You've got Scott. You've got guys that can fill in if you need to. And like you said, if it's only for one start, then that's fine because – you know, it's just I think Dana, when he wants to kind of unleash Arrigetti on the big leagues or bring him up, he's probably going to want him to be a guy that's going to be around for a while, get comfortable, and just really truly be able to see what he can do. So, I mean, I'm fine either way. It was just for me, it was an interesting situation to think about because of how well Martinez pitched.
Yeah, he pitched really good. And I don't think they're going to want to make him like a starter or give him a spot start because I think they actually value him out of the bullpen. And they don't want to mess with him too much. That's why I hold Martinez in higher regard than Belak, but I think they do too. And because they do too, they don't want to be tinkering with like his role, which right now it's like, you know, middle relief, couple of innings. And if you're in an absolute emergency, give me 3 2/3 and 3 2/3 on 32 pitches, rather. I'm not a fan of the opener. I don't think that the Astros really like are, I don't think that they're built that way. We've never seen them go in that direction. I don't think they go the opener route where a reliever pitches one inning and then they have a guy who's the bulk guy or the follower. I don't see that really being an option for this team.
I think the other thing is that if Seth Martinez is used to warming up in the bullpen, and we know that these are all creatures of habit more so than basically almost any other sport with the way baseball guys have their routines, Seth Martinez probably has a routine when he gets ready to come into a game, and Belak has started before. So if that makes it easier and it's only going to be for a short period of time, then I'm fine with that. I completely, you know how I feel. I'm not a big fan of Brandon Belak.
Sure.
But I really believe that, especially with what you're trying to figure out in the bullpen, that Seth Martinez is valuable even before last night, but now even more so, that I'm fine doing that because it bridges the gap until you get true starters available or a starter in Verlander's case available. And then it keeps Martinez so that he can do the things that he's going to have to do for the short term.
713-780-ESPN. Was yesterday's win for the Astros going to be the turning point? Biggest win of the year. What's the plan going forward if no Fromber for a significant period of time? 713-780-ESPN. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. We're on YouTube. Just search ESPN Houston. We're on the Twitter. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, when we come back, the fear-mongering we saw over the weekend for the Astros, quite frankly, it made me sick. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, I want to tell you about Vanderford Air right now. Look, we know that the dog days of summer are coming. They're closer than you think. And because they are coming, you have to be prepared. That means your air conditioning and HVAC systems have to be prepared and ready to go. And once they start going, they can't get up and go away on you when you need them most. That's why Vanderford Air is so important, because Vanderford Air is locally owned and operated here in the Houston area, and they are dedicated to Houstonians. That means when you call Vanderford Air, they're not going to sit there and go, yeah, we'll see you next week. Yeah, we'll see you in a couple days based on our schedule. Nope. When you call them, they have a 24-hour guarantee that they will be with you at your place, starting to check out the problem and analyzing what you need to do. That's an unbelievable bonus when you're talking about 100-degree heat and the thought of possibly being days without any kind of air conditioning. That's why you call them. And you should call them now, because they can go check out your system and do a tune-up and do everything that they need to do to make sure that your system's ready to go before it gets to the point of those triple digits. They also do the same great things with plumbing. If you want to think about a complete repipe, if you want to do some things to try and upgrade, if you have an older house, they are there for you as well. And again, the best part about all of this is they do unbelievable work, and it's all 100% money-back guaranteed. That's what you really want when you're doing business with anybody. 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. That means either it's a part that they fix or putting in a whole new system, there will be a performance guarantee, a quality workmanship guarantee that their people do it right the first time, a comfort assurance guarantee that you get the right temperatures and the right results and the best value at the lowest cost to you or your money back. No risk, customer trust, guarantees. That's what you want as any consumer. That's what you get at Vanderford Air. Check them out today, vanderfordair.com. Call them. It's real easy to remember. 281-557-COOL, 281-557-COOL.
coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I am Branham. The great baseball mind that is King of Twitch. He didn't like the fact that they brought up Blair Henley. I don't think bringing up a seventh-round pitcher to go against the Rangers was smart. I'm with him, especially hindsight 2020, especially the fact that he only got an out. I get that the Astros didn't have an option to start the game. Like, Henley might have been your best option to start the game. But if you're going to be willing to pull a guy after a third of an inning, even if he's getting shelled, like the whole reason he's up there is to eat innings, mm-hmm. if you're going to be willing to pull a guy after a third of an inning, even if he's getting shelled, you might as well have just called up a reliever and went with a bullpen day, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But you won, so I don't really care that much.
Yeah, look, I mean, you would like to have had a little bit more talent behind who you were going to call up if indeed you were bringing someone in to try and, you know, bridge the gap quickly and save the day. It's an unfortunate situation because if you brought someone up, someone that's been up to the big leagues before or at least has been close, you've got someone that is probably more in attack mode and probably has the talent level to pitch in the major leagues. Like you said, to start the show, I mean, you got to feel sorry for this kid because he probably had no clue this was coming. Obviously, it blindsided everyone with Fromber's news. And then just like that, you're just thrown into the fire. You're thrown into a towering inferno against that lineup on the road. And, you know, I guess, you know, you're supposed to say, well, nothing's expected of me, but that's your big league debut. You want to, you know, you're going to be pressing. You want everything to go your way. Your nerves are going to be a mess, and it's not the ideal situation. So it would have been nice, but I think because of the way the bullpen hasn't really performed the way they, I guess some people wanted it to or thought they could, we had serious doubts about the middle. But, yeah, I mean, it worked out. Thank goodness it did. It's a feel-good story because it did. But you're right. If you wanted to go back and do it a different way in retrospect, yeah, I would agree with that.
The Todd the Show on Twitch, who hates Chaz McCormick.
I just found that out. I didn't know how much hate he had for him.
Yeah, Todd didn't like many people. Todd has disdain for a lot. I've noticed that. I think it's the Yankee in him, though. I think it's typical Yankee in him.
He's from Wisconsin.
Yeah, but he likes the Giants.
Oh, that's
so he's got
true.
Some Yankee
yeah, that is
in him.
True.
Is he from Wisconsin? I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was two guys from Wisconsin in the state of Texas. That's weird.
There's more.
He almost killed Yordan yesterday. Yordan rule number 71. If Yordan is going to make an effort at the ball, even at the fly ball, even if it's not his, even if he has no business being in the area, even if he shouldn't be playing the field to begin with, which is Yordan rule number one, if Yordan is making an effort for the baseball, everybody else has to leave the area and get out of the way of Yordan Alvarez, even if he shouldn't be the one making the play.
It's like the seven deadly words. Get out of the way, okay? We saw what happened with Yordan and Peña, and that didn't end well. How they didn't end up making contact, I don't know, but thankfully they didn't. But you're absolutely right. Look, I love seeing Yordan in left field until we get to a certain point, and then I'm fine with him sitting down again. But in those situations, my God, one out at that time in the game, good, bad, or indifferent, it's not going to be as big a deal as losing that big dude, especially with him being really hot right now. But at any time, you just don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Not a fan of him playing the outfield at all.
Hey, we lost Jeremy. I don't know what happened. Are we still on the air, Brian? Or
you lost
okay,
me?
So you see if we can get Jeremy back momentarily. But, yeah, that's one of those deals like when you're watching a car wreck on the news. And you, as much as you see it coming and you see the intersection and the cars coming from different directions, you hold your breath. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, God, here it comes. And, I mean, I'm sitting on the couch last night watching that play and just literally just completely tensed up going, oh, no.
Do you sit on the couch or lay on the couch?
I sit on the couch.
I usually lay on the couch. It depends on the I'm more of a lay on the couch than sit on the couch guy.
See, I mean, I'm kind of disappointed, if I'm going to be honest, on our couches. When we bought them, I thought that they were going to be bigger and more – and, like, you could actually lay comfortably. But it's kind of the seated area, the seating part is not – it's not like a almost like a single, like a bed where you could lay down and feel comfortable. Or at least it's not wide enough. So I sit and I put a pillow on the coffee table and put my feet up and kind of sit back.
Yeah, I do that with a couch upstairs. Now that you mention that, with the ottoman.
Yep.
Downstairs, I'm more of a lay-on-the-couch kind of guy. All right, I'm tired of this Astro fear-mongering. We were going to do this yesterday, but the Fromber news kind of hijacked a good chunk of our program yesterday. Some of these tweets, just a few of them, from – this was after the game Saturday. So this is the Astros. They dropped the first two games of the series. No one likes losing to the Rangers. No one likes losing. Everyone's mad. Astros are no good at baseball anymore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Here's just four that I pulled. This is just a small little scratch. This is a microcosm of everything that was being said on that night. I'm not going to read the tweets. You probably know some of these people. The Astros are a disaster and the biggest disappointment in baseball so far this year. Okay, it's a little fear-mongering there.
Biggest disappointment in baseball? Wow, that's a bit over the top. Okay, that might be a bit extravagant.
Another one, dang, maybe the Astros just ain't got...
We got a bad connection.
Teasing, guys. Like, there's still two games to be played in the series in which the Astros won the final two and split the series. Another one, it was time for Maldi to go this year, but the team didn't have a leader ready to take his place. The entire team loved him. Yordan loved him. Who knows how much knowledge he provided in the dugout, even if he couldn't produce offensively himself. Dude studied the game. Because the Astros lost a few games at the start of the season, they have leadership issues. This sounds like the whole Carlos Correa thing. The Astros are never going to recover from losing Carlos Correa's leadership because he can't make those mound visits. Oh, wow, they won the World Series the very next year. Tell me you don't know ball without telling me you don't know ball.
Tell me. And then he mentions, of all people, like, we know Verlander loved him. We know that Fromber loved him.
Yeah.
But Yordan loved him because he gave him kisses on the neck after hitting home runs.
I didn't catch that. That's a good call.
Come on.
Like, of all the ones you're going to mention loving Maldi, it's Yordan? How about the pitching staff? That's a great point. And then another one. Rangers hired Bruce Bochy strictly to offset Astros having Dusty Baker. That's out there. That's a bit of a reach. I love Bochy. I don't think he was hired to offset the Astros having Dusty. Maybe the Dusty Baker, like, old school manager, maybe it led to a movement, but they didn't hire Bruce Bochy to offset the Astros having Dusty. It wasn't like some sort of chess move to counter Dusty Baker in the Astros dugout. It's because they tried to hire the best manager possible. But Rangers hired Bochy strictly to offset Astros having Dusty, and our fan base has played right into strengthening Rangers by running off the only manager in the AL West to beat the Rangers consistently. Last time I checked, Dusty Baker retired.
Yeah.
Did he not retire?
Yeah, he did. He walked away.
And I know that Dusty in his press conference says he was sick of the journalist and he was sick of the fans. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but he also said that he wanted to go hang out with his family. Like, he wanted to spend time with his grandkids and his wife, and he wanted to go back to California. But I think his priority was his family, and that I'm going to take him seriously whenever he retired from managing so he could spend time with his family as opposed to throwing a jab at the media and the fans who criticized him. Dusty Baker retired.
Yeah, he walked away from the game. He was able to walk away with a championship and another World Series. I mean, and another good run towards a World Series with coming up short against the Rangers. He held his head high and walked away from the game. So, you know, no one begged him back. They didn't have to. He wanted to fade into the sunset. He did it. You replaced him with the guy that was right next to him, that was right next to Hinch, that if you want to try and keep it as much the status quo for the players and the everyday, you got the guy. But, of course, losing brings out the worst in everybody. And on the Rangers hiring Bochy, they're trying to emulate you. They're trying to catch you. They made all these free agent moves trying to catch you in the division, trying to do the things that you've done consistently for 7-plus years. And they went to an experienced, longtime manager to try and do what they hadn't been able to do. The Astros aren't trying to do anything the Rangers did. The Rangers were trying to emulate what the Astros did.
Yeah, it's just the fear-mongering to me is just – it's funny. Like, people like to get a little fear-mongery when you lose a couple of games. It's baseball. It's a marathon. It'll play out. It's okay. The Astros will be fine. They'll be okay. Hopefully Fromber's okay. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. People are being dumb about Yordan hitting in the two-hole again, about that not being an RBI spot. What was said? Why are they dumb? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If you want to be smart, you should get a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops, the highest quality basketball goal in the market. You'll love the goals from Pro Dunk Hoops. It's unlike anything in the big box stores. They're not cheap. I go walking through my neighborhood, you know, once every month or so because I like to exercise. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find, Pro Dunk. When I'm spending that time walking through my neighborhood that one time a month, I see these basketball goals that are busted up. They're broken. The glass is broken. Some of them aren't glass. It's like plywood, and they aren't very good, or flexiglass, whatever you call it, cheap material. aerial, whatever. The rim's busted up. Some of them are laying flat on the belly. They can't handle the wind. Don't buy a cheap goal. Get a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. If you're going to do it right. Pro Dunk Hoops with the tempered glass backboard gives you the true, authentic feel off the glass, off the rim. Stainless steel hardware. It's rust-proof, which is a must-have in Houston, of course. Can't find that at the big box stores. And also, they have a breakaway rim on their height-adjustable goal. That's key because if you want to have a little slam dunk contest, you can lower the goal all the way down to 5 feet, anywhere up to 10 feet. And they got that breakaway rim that you can dunk on, hang on. It'll keep you safe. Don't have to worry about it. Thing. Also, we mentioned it being height adjustable. Their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goal with a drill. That's all you got to do. Drill into Thor, raise and lower the goal from 5 feet to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. It's their lightning adjust feature, and it makes it easy for people like you and me. Their accessories are next level, too. LED light kits for night play, backstop nets, pole pad lettering, and lots more. You can order everything online, including professional installation. Yes, the pros at Pro Dunk professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit produnk.com. That's produnk.com.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. 713-780-3776. 7612. Can we try Dubon on first base and see how he does? Can't be worse than Abreu. His bat is definitely better. What do you think on that?
I don't really like it. It's not the biggest of targets over at first base, but I guess if you go by infielder, outfielder, can probably pick a ground ball. And he's a better bat. Look, I think we're taking applications at this point for the near future because Abreu ain't doing a whole lot to give anybody any kind of, or Singleton for that matter, that you get your, you need to get production out of first base sooner rather than later. I mean, I kiddingly last night, but half kiddingly and you know, just to get the reactions, said, hey, any chance Caratini can play first base, asking for a fan base because everybody's watching that position. But I mean, you got to consider Dubon. You got to consider Caratini because of the fact that it's been so putrid over there.
You tweeted that at Pac-Man Joel.
I did.
If you're going to do that, I'd rather just catch Caratini and have Yiner play first base. I think Caratini is a better defensive catcher, and then I think it saves the legs of a better hitter a little bit more. So I would go that route. I don't hate that route. I would say Dubon's a better option than Abreu. Like, Dubon's only played one game at first base last year, started that one game. But he's a gold glove guy. Like, he can learn to play first base. Like, it's going to take him a few reps in a few games to, like, figure out the semantics and, like, the footwork and some of the nuances of the position. But if you gave Dubon 10 games at first base, who's a better defensive first baseman in 6 weeks? Dubon or Abreu?
Oh, Dubon. No,
Dubon,
no, no
easy. Dubon easy. And Dubon is a better hitter. Now, I agree with you that it's not, like, the long-term answer. But if tomorrow was Game 7 of the World Series and I had to pick between Abreu at first and Dubon at first, I'd rather it be Dubon. And if you know that in your back of your mind, maybe you should start working with Dubon to play a little bit of first base every now and then.
No doubt, because here's the thing, Jeremy. The scariest part of all of this is you might have the guy with more power that's not playing there yet. Dubon might have more power. He might be a better overall hitter. And the only thing that you're needing to tune up is the defense and get comfortable playing the position defensively. And like you said, he's a gold glover, but he has the skill set to defend and dig balls out of the dirt. But the scary part is he's already a better hitter and probably has more power right now than what we're seeing from Abreu. That was not supposed to be the plan.
No, I'm Dubon over Abreu, but I'm Brandon Belt above all of them, and I agree with you that Dubon's like a long-term answer at first base.
Right.
He doesn't hit enough to play first base every day, but he's
well, not only that,
than Abreu.
He has such value to be that Swiss Army knife, too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he should be an everyday first baseman, but I do think he's better than Abreu. 713-780-3776, HRMP listener line. Why not Yordan at first base? Look, I don't want Yordan playing the field at all. I think his bat's too valuable that I wouldn't play him in the field. He'd be my permanent designated hitter. I know that he doesn't like that. I don't hate the idea, but that's something that you can't do in the middle of the season. That's something where you should be working on all offseason and you make a commitment. Yordan Alvarez, you're going to be our full-time first baseman. Here's everything you need to do in the offseason and attack it. Now, I have heard that he played a little bit of first base in the minors and it was not pretty.
Mm.
So there is that.
I'm with you, though. I mean, look, especially when he gets going the way he's going, and the number one most important thing, and there's really not a number two anywhere in the zip code, is to just hit the baseball. So you don't need him working right now or, you know, trying to field grounders and understand more about the position. Just let him focus on what he does really damn good. And in the offseason, yeah, you'd want him to work on it. You don't want him to go play, like, winter ball or anything
that.
Yeah, it would just be like if you want to go through reps and try and get glove work in.
Yeah, it's like fun going in the backfield.
Right.
Like, but even then, like, would I rather him play first and left? Yes, but I'm not doing it in the middle of the year, and I would rather him be the DH way more than any one of those.
I'll give you another one, too, George. I mean, with that being said, Jordan rule number 103, if he plays first base, Astros make special cleat that has a massive heel so that it touches the bag and he can't get spiked because there's just another way he could get hurt.
Yeah, it's like the Bagwell hand thing to the foot.
Yes.
Whatever that was, parallel would be. Let's give Jordan something for the heel that Bagwell had for the back of the hand. Lamont, can you ever think of a situation where a team's whole starting lineup is out? Go look at the Astros pitchers that are out. Yeah, the Astros starting rotation that's injured might be better than the Astros starting rotation. It is better.
Yeah, we said it started the year.
Yeah, but now you've added Fromber.
It's true.
So, like, it's swung it. Like, it was probably an argument before Fromber. Now it's definitely injured guys are better than the healthy guys. I'm sure it's happened, but I can't remember it being something as, like, crazy as this for the Astros. I'm sure it's happened somewhere else in baseball. I like how Espada has weathered the storm so far, not making panic moves. What grade do you give Espada on the bullpen usage so far? Let's grade it 1 through 10.
Like, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot to work with. But, again, what I don't like more than – I understand the shortcomings of the middle of the pen. What I really don't like is some of the things we've highlighted in terms of when you're using your high-leverage back of the pen guys.
Yeah.
I'll give him a 6 right now.
I'll go like a 7-1. I think he's been fine. The one thing that I would point to is using Hader whenever you're down by runs in the ninth. I can give you like a pass on opening day, but that game where they were down by 2, I think it was the third or fourth game of that series. I can't remember. I can't remember. They were down 2 and he used them. I didn't love that.
I think it was the Saturday night game, yeah.
So that would have been game 3, right?
Yeah.
Because they started on Thursday.
Yep.
Yeah, so the third game of that series. I didn't like that. But other than that, like, whatever. Like, he's using some guys who aren't great. I don't think he's the reason that they've been hit at times. I think he's been doing fine. 713-780-ESPN. So people, this whole Jordan Alvarez hitting second, it bothers some of the old seam heads that don't really like. How do I want to phrase this? They definitely don't like analytics. Some of them might not even understand analytics. Like, you notice that people who don't understand things, they just poo-poo on them and they diminish them because they don't understand it and they just want to demean it. Jeremy Booth, I think he does have an understanding of the analytics, if I'm being honest. I just don't think he likes it. He's been on a campaign talking about how Jordan Alvarez should not be batting second, that the best hitters on the best teams – you can't win with the best guys batting second. Don't look at the Rangers last year. Corey Seager's their best hitter. He bats second. But here was Jeremy Booth on with Channel 11, Jason Bristol, talking about Jordan in the two hole and how he's not a fan of it.
But no, we want to turn around and we want to put guys who are innate run producers, some of the best hitters in the game, in a spot to set the table. If it's not working other places to win, then you don't do it here. If it's working other places to win, okay, I get it. But if you look at some of these other clubs, we'll go with Philadelphia for a second. The lineup is longer than right here. I don't trust some of the guys they have in this lineup. Diaz, believe it or not, is still unproven, although I really like what he can do.
Right.
And when it comes to Jeremy Pena, we have a little bit of a rebirth that we can protect him. If you want a Brady to be productive, you got to protect him. I think that while some of these pieces are interchangeable, you'll see the comfort level, the energy, the excitement come back once they're able to play productive baseball and win games. No one likes losing. And for all the stuff we see on, is it X? Were we calling it X?
I still call it Twitter.
X, formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, for all the stuff we see on X, do you guys want to hit somebody second and have a bunch of L's, or do you want somebody second and have another parade? To me, that's just the way I look at it.
Yeah, Seager hit second on the Rangers last year again. A lot of people, you're not going to get the RBI situations for Jordan Alvarez. Jordan Alvarez had some more RBIs in that game yesterday. Mm-hmm. Don't like to be on pace guy, but he's on pace for 132.5 RBIs. I would say he's getting plenty of RBI chances.
Yeah.
If you're on 133 RBI pace, I don't think that you batting in the two hole and not getting these RBI looks is true.
I'm just going around baseball as he's saying this, and whether it's the leadoff or the two spot, and he probably would go absolutely nuts if you batted, you know, your best hitter in the leadoff.
Well, how about Acuna? Acuna bats leadoff.
I'm saying Acuna bats leadoff. Yeah. Kyle Schwarber bats leadoff. Judge has batted.
I mean, Schwarber's not their best hitter though.
No, Harper probably is, but he's one of their biggest run producers in terms of for the RBIs and the big bopper bat. He bats leadoff, and so he's one of their two or three best hitters. He's batting, you know, close to the top lineup every night. Judge has batted leadoff and two previously to this year. You get Soto now; they may make some changes. I mean, obviously the Dodgers lineup is loaded, but Freeman has hit two. He's hit three. I look at that. That sounds like to me like you're right. Like this guy just doesn't want to. You know, change. It's like that commercial with that family that still uses the phone with the long cord and won't put, you know, it change is no good. Well, yeah, you got to be open to the fact that this is working so far for a guy that's really getting hot right now, and he had three ribbies again last night.
Yeah, give me at bats. You have Altuve. The bottom of the Astros order is not bad. It's the best Astros bottom of the order that they've had in the last few years.
Sure,
largely because Martin Maldonado is not around, but he's getting plenty of RBI chances. Like the whole he's not getting RBI looks is just flat out false. And the whole well you're not going to have parades if you have your best hitter hitting second is also false. Look at the best hitter around every single team in Major League Baseball. You're going to have more guys that bat one or two than bat three.
Mm-hmm.
713s, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter, I'm still calling it Twitter, that why do they keep giving Jeremy Booth a platform? Simple. Because we play his audio, because it gets traction clicks on Twitter, because everybody disagrees with it, and it gets attention, it gets impressions, it gets clicks. Like, we know the answer of why they keep putting him on there. We just, you know, we're going to fall for it each and every time. But we like conversation. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. What do you trust more? Which unit on the Texans do you trust more, the offense or the defense? 713-780-ESPN. It's the HRMP listener line on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Broadcasting
live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Who do you trust more? Which unit for the Texans? Which side of the ball? The offense or the defense? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. So last year, the Texans finished 13th in points scored in the NFL, 13th out of 32. They were 11th in points allowed. So if you look at it from a points point of view, the defense gave up fewer points than the offense scored relative to the NFL. If you look at it from a yards per game perspective, the Texans were 12th in offense, and they were 14th in defense. So it's pretty close. Defense was better at, you know, giving up points than the offense was at scoring relative to their side of the ball. But in terms of moving the ball, the Texans moved the ball more effectively than the Texans defended it. So you can kind of go either way last year depending on which of the two you value more. As of right now, which unit do you trust the most for the Texans? Is it the offense with C.J. Stroud, Joe Mixon, the trio of receivers, Tank, Nico, Diggs, throw in Dalton Schultz? Or is it the defense? D'Amico Ryan's calling the plays, rookie Will Anderson going into his second year, Danielle Hunter coming in, Azeez Al-Shaair, linebacker. You talk about the other moves on the defensive line. Which unit do you trust more, Texans offense or Texans defense?
It's a great conversation to have because they're both better than average. I'm going to take the offense right now. I trust the offense because you've got veterans that are upgrades. As you mentioned, you've got almost every position filled and spoken for with a lot more weapons for CJ coming off the greatest rookie season in quarterback history in the NFL. Yes, left guard is a problem. Yes, but there are still bodies that are on the roster right now, and the ability to fill that one position, I think, is going to be something that they'll probably focus on still between now and camp. On the flip side of the ball, those are all new guys that are going to have to gel. They're going to have to start working together, and we're still wondering who the second corner is going to be, whether it's going to be one of the two guys they brought in, Akuda and or is it C.J. Henderson?
Yep.
And then if they're going to draft somebody. And then the safety spot, because we don't know if Jimmy Ward is going to be anywhere close to where he was with the Niners, or he's going to be Jimmy Ward of the year previous, and that's somewhere that they got to upgrade as well. So I think that it's not that they're bad. And I do love what they've done in terms of the ability to bring in extra pass rushing players. I just think that there's a couple more holes to fill, and I think there's still a lot of gelling that has to be done, as opposed to a unit that right now, with Slowick being able to have all those weapons at his disposal and with CJ, I just think for the start of the season, I trust the offense more right now.
It was close last year when you look at just the numbers. Last year, I would give the slight edge to the offense, quite frankly. Like, they weren't perfect, obviously, and I think they were a little bit up and down last year. I think injuries played a factor into that. But it was very close last year, and I think it's very close this year. I think both sides of the ball can be top 10. I think the offense has a better chance to be top 5, though. So I lean offense. Stroud going into his second year, you've given him more weapons. Like, who was your third receiver last year? Mm-hmm. It was a rotation of Robert Woods or Noah Brown, who were still on the team, but now you've added Diggs. And, like, is Diggs better than Nico? Maybe it's a conversation. Is Diggs better than Tank? Maybe it's a conversation. But if Diggs is third, he's far better than who you had at that spot last year. You bring back Dalton Schultz, okay, so that's kind of a wash at that position. I think that you've upgraded slightly at the running back spot. I don't think it's a major upgrade, but it's a slight upgrade. Now, you don't have depth there. I hope that's something that they do address. And then your offensive line should be better. So the offense, to me, takes a step up. The defense does, too, because I think they upgraded at defensive end with Danelle Hunter over John Gernard. Will Anderson should be a year better. I like Al Shaier in the middle. But to me, if I needed one offensive series to score or I needed a defensive stop, I would rather have the ball in Stroud's hands to go give me that scoring drive that I need. So the offense wins for me by a hair.
Yeah, I like a lot of the points you guys have made, and I would take the offense as well. I mean, mostly for what you just mentioned, you and Joel both just mentioned. There's fewer holes to me on the offensive side. Like, offensive side, you mentioned running back depth. I guess you could add a second hole to that. And then left guard, you have a question mark. Whereas defense, you know, you're worried about the second defensive tackle, you're worried about second corner, and you're worried about safety, not just depth, but actual starters, more starters on the defensive side than you're worried about on the offensive side. But also think, and this kind of goes along with what you just said there, Jeremy, about what you would rather have on the field with the game on the line. And the reason I take the offense in addition to, you know, having fewer holes to fill is I just have a faith that if things go wrong around the star players, C.J. Stroud, as a singular player, is more able to elevate those around him than a star pass rusher, than a Will Anderson, than a Danielle Hunter, than, you know, a Derek Stingley. The quarterback position, just because of the nature of having the ball in their hands every time, and when it's a star player like C.J. Stroud, they can suffer things around them going wrong and still elevate their teammates and get the job done, whereas if things go wrong on the defensive side, a singular player isn't able to have the same impact on that side of the ball.
I don't think defensive tackles are – like the second defensive tackle spot, I think we're kind of I think we're kind of putting too much weight in that because it's not like a huge name. I think that D'Amico wants that defensive tackle spot to just kind of eat blocks for other people. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that he looks for there. But I agree with you on the other fronts. Like, the back end of your defense has concerns for me. Like, if you don't get to the quarterback in a hurry, okay. Like, Petrie and Ward combination at safety wasn't great last year. We're hoping that Ward can stay healthy, and we're hoping that Petrie in the second year of this defense can improve. Love Stingley, but Stingley's been a little injury-prone in his first 2 years, and then that second corner is not wonderful. The nickel corner is fine. It's okay. It's nothing to write home about. So I agree. The defense has more holes, even if I slightly disagree with the defensive tackle. And their secondary can be suspect, especially mm-hmm. the secondary.
Yeah, and I think that there's still time to fix and patch up some more. But, yeah, as it stands now, because I like the last point that you made, which is if I'm looking for one or the other, yeah, I mean, we saw it last year. I trust CJ with the ball needing a score to win. And that's not to slap the face of the defense, but these guys are going to have to figure it all out. You've got a couple guys on your roster that could be your defensive tackle. We'll wait for camp to see how that battle might play out and if they do add anybody else. But, on the defensive side as a positive, the fact that you have three guys that can pin their ears back and go get the quarterback from all different parts of the defensive line is a massive move for the defense. And I really like Al Shaier in the middle. It's just that I have concerns. If you got an elusive quarterback that can kind of beat the first line of attack from the pass rush, you could be in some serious trouble unless you make some adjustments with safety in the other corner.
I think Al Shaier is the underrated move that is just going to be the guy that like eats up tackles, and I think that's why they want a one-tech big guy that Al can like eat the defense, like eat the offensive lineman. That way Alshire can come in and make some tackles without really getting blocked a whole lot. I think it's going to be an underrated move. If you had to pick one side to be strong, the defensive line or the secondary, which of the two would you rather have? Like one side strong, one side's weak. Not saying the Texans are weak on one side of the ball, but just if you were building a football team, would you rather have a strong defensive line and a weakish secondary, or a weakish defensive line and a strong secondary?
I'm going to go with the strong defensive line and the weakish secondary, because if you've got a strong defensive line, that means, one, you can stop the run, and that means, two, you can go get the quarterback quickly, which means that if you're putting pressure on the quarterback, your defensive backs have to guard for less time and don't have to be as effective as they would on the flip side. So I'll take the better defensive line than secondary in that scenario.
I'm 100% with you. And the one thing that I would throw in there with the secondary is not, you know, it still takes skill to play zone, but you can try to kind of get by with a zone defense where you can't really do that on the defensive line. Like defensive line, you got to be better than your man. In the secondary, sometimes you can try to hide guys with the zone. A few people weighing in on this. What do you trust more, Texans offense, Texans defense? Equally right now, Hunter and Will Anderson can easily have 30-plus sacks between the two next year. Is that in play, 30 sacks between the two? I don't see why not.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I think Anderson's going to upgrade what he's done, and I don't think there's any reason to think that Hunter's going to fall off.
I'm very interested to see how teams scheme against the Texans defensive line. Like, a lot of times you'll have that second blocker, whether it's, you know, your tight end over a guy, whether you're chipping a guy with a tight end or you're chipping a guy with the running back, or you just keep them in pass protection. I'm wondering who they give more respect to between Hunter and Will Anderson. I'll be fascinated to watch this season.
You're right. That's going to be fun to watch, because obviously you got to respect both of them. Then if you put Autry and you move them around. Yeah.
That's the wild card of it. Wow. I like Autry a lot, too. I think it's another underrated signing. AB says easily offense. Defense will still be very good, especially if they nail the draft. Robert says, give me the offense. And 0483, I trust the offense more top to bottom. Can't really trust the back end of the defense. A lot of second-chance players being picked up for defense. I think it's fair.
Yeah.
I think it's fair. So it seems pretty unanimous that it's offense. Desert Stroh on YouTube, on paper, Texans offense is better. So no one said defense.
Well, and I think that, you know, it's a fluid situation, too. So, like the one texter said, there is the chance that, you know, they upgrade with between now, whether it be the draft and or a combination of the draft, and there's still some street free agents and guys out there that if you want to upgrade safety, you know, is one that comes to mind where there's some pretty good safeties that are still out there that, you know, you could do some things depending on, again, how creative you can get financially.
Would it be enough to pass the offense, though? Like, Justin Simmons is a name that I see like on a lot
name.
Of yep. wish lists. So, like, if you were to go Simmons, like, sign him, and then say maybe you draft a corner at 42, is that enough to pass the offense for you?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
No, just simply because you got Slowick in year two is going to be more comfortable. You got CJ, who in year one showed you he did with a lot less what he can now do again with a whole lot more. And really, you just have to figure out one spot on the line, and you have a top 10 tight end. You have those three receivers. You have Mixon. Man, I'm telling you what, that right there, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the defense can pass the offense, at least on paper, before the start of the year. 713-780-ESPN. You can weigh in on that. Offense or defense, which do you have the more trust in? There is also, after the Texans made the big move with Diggs, there was a lot of Texans-Cowboys debate. I hate the Texans better than the Cowboys banter. I'll tell you why. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.